sleeping position, and dreaming. Interviews with almost 700 people revealed that sleeping on the stomach is strongly associated with sexual dreams, having a love affair with a celebrity, and dreams in which you appear naked, or on a really good night, all three. A similar study, researchers in Turkey discovered, revealed that compared to those sleeping on their left-hand side, right-hand sleepers tend to have more dreams that are associated with happiness and hope, enjoy better sleep quality, and experience significantly fewer nightmares. Dreams and the way to direct them. Practical observations. The Marquis d'Hervey de Saint-Denis was a kind of 19th century Hong Kong fooey. By day, Hervé de Saint-Denis lived the life of a mild-mannered French academic with a scholarly interest in Chinese culture and customs. But each night, he threw off his academic gown, donned a nightcap, and delved deep into the science of dreaming. Born in 1822, Hervé, as he was known to his friends, started to record his dreams when he was just 13. He soon discovered that he was able to remember at least one dream each night, and became obsessed with recording these nocturnal adventures in as much detail as possible. He spent the next 20 years describing his dreams, eventually filling 22 notebooks with his nightly reports and illustrations. Tragically, these notebooks had become lost in the mists of time, and so modern-day sleep scientists are not able to benefit from Hervé's nightly reports. However, on the upside, the great French dreamer did leave a lasting account of some of his experiences in his book Les rêves et les moyens de les diriger, Observations pratiques, or as I tend to refer to it, Dreams and How to Guide Them, Practical Observations. First published anonymously in 1867, this, now classic text, describes a series of fascinating dream-related thoughts and investigations. A large part of the book is given over to Hervé's experimental work into lucid dreaming. In one chapter, for instance, he notes that if dreams are based on waking experiences, then it shouldn't be possible to dream about something that you have never experienced. Eager to put this idea to the ultimate test, Hervé tried his best to kill himself during several lucid dreams. Each time, he failed to dream about his untimely demise, and so concluded that waking experiences do act as the building blocks for our nightly excursions. Some of Hervé's most innovative work focused on whether it was possible to influence his dreams. He decided that the best way forward involved a simple two-stage procedure. First, he would spend his waking hours enjoying some kind of pleasant experience while sniffing an unusual smell. Then, when he was asleep, he would expose himself to the same smell in the hope that it would cause him to dream about the experience. To test the technique, he purchased a bottle containing an unusual perfume, and spent 2 weeks with a group of friends in the mountains. Whenever he came across a particularly striking mountain view, Hervé whipped out the perfume bottle, placed some of the scent on his handkerchief, and sniffed away. When he returned home, he arranged for his servant to quietly creep into his bedroom at randomly determined times and pour a small amount of the scent on his pillow. The experiment was a huge hit, and resulted in Hervé enjoying several joyous mountain-related dreams. Thrilled with his success, he decided to repeat the study using sound instead of scent. He attended several balls and arranged for the orchestra leader to play a particular piece of music whenever he danced with an especially attractive woman. Hervé then built a special music box that played the same tune and constructed a mechanism to link the operation of the box to his bedside clock. At predetermined times throughout the night, the music box suddenly jumped into action and played the selected tune. Once again, the study was a spectacular success, with the night music causing Hervé to enjoy several erotically charged dreams. Hervé's technique, although fascinating and effective, suffered from one major problem. Although almost everyone would like to be able to have sweet dreams on demand, most people are not prepared to spend their days associating particular experiences with unusual smells and sounds. Would it be possible, wondered researchers, to obtain the same effects by exposing dreamers to subtle stimuli that already had strong associations? Would, for instance, people's dreams become more pleasant if you secretly sprayed some sweet-smelling rose scent in their bedrooms? Or take a turn for the worse if you gently whispered death threats into their ear? Several anecdotal reports suggested that there might be something to this seemingly far-fetched idea. Take, for example, the remarkable experience reported by a well-known British general and his wife. Towards the middle of the 19th century, General Sir William Sleeman was sent to India to help suppress a violent secret society, known as the Thuggee, which incidentally is the origin of the word thug. One night, Sleeman and his wife pitched their tent in a field and went to bed. Soon after falling asleep, Sleeman's wife had a horrible dream about corpses, woke up, and asked her husband to move their tent to another location. When General Sleeman walked outside the tent, he noticed a very weak, but somewhat unpleasant smell. Curious, the good general dug up the ground, uncovered the decomposed bodies of 14 victims of the Thuggee, and concluded that the faint smell of death had influenced his wife's dreams. Although compelling, such reports could always be dismissed as coincidence, and so researchers set about conducting more controlled investigations. Many of these studies were carried out by the 19th century French psychologist Alfred Maury. Over the course of several months, Maury arranged for his friends to subject him to several strange stimuli when he was sound asleep, including sticking a straw between his toes and stroking his face with a feather. Time and again, the stimuli influenced Maury's dreams, with, for instance, the straw causing him to dream about having a stake driven through his feet, and the feather forming the basis of a terrible torture-based dream in which he had hot pitch poured onto his face. Other researchers eliminated the need for their colleagues to creep around in the dark by using the cutting-edge technology of the day to deliver the stimuli. In 1899, an American physiologist named Leonard Corning proudly unveiled the most elaborate of these devices. Those wishing to try out Corning's cutting-edge dream machine were invited to lie down on the couch and have a leather helmet firmly secured on their head. The helmet resembled the type of headgear now used by amateur boxers and was designed to hold metallic saucers over the volunteers' ears. 25 feet long lengths of rubber tubing were then used to connect the saucers to a nearby Edison phonograph, and during the night, Corning piped various pieces of music into the volunteers' ears. Harmony is more effective than melody, and for this reason, selections from the Wagnerian compositions render excellent service. Corning claimed that his remarkable device could help those suffering from nightmares, and described a case in which one man's Carnival of the Horrible was transformed into agreeable visions over the course of just a handful of sessions. In another instance, the procedure helped a woman suffering from depression, although the lady in question also exhibited a striking gain in appetite that culminated in a small, though decided, accession of weight. Although undoubtedly years ahead of its time, the rather limited technology available to Corning meant that his remarkable invention failed to catch the public imagination. Like all of the late 19th century dream architects, Corning wasn't sure when his volunteers were dreaming. As a result, trying to play a sound or spray a scent at the right time was very much a hit-and-miss affair. Faced with this seemingly insurmountable problem, researchers turned their back on dream control and didn't give the idea a second look for more than 50 years. Smelling the Roses. In the 19th century, several pioneering researchers examined the effect of smell on dreams. Unfortunately, this type of research fell out of favour for many years and has only recently been revived. In 2009, Michael Schradl from the Central Institute for Mental Health in Mannheim examined the relationship. Schradl and his team arranged for a group of volunteers to experience one of two smells while they were dreaming. One of the smells was very pleasant and reminded most people of freshly cut roses. The other smelt of rotten eggs. The following morning, the volunteers were asked to describe their dreams, and the researchers rated the subsequent reports for positive and negative emotion. Even though they were completely unaware of the smells, the volunteers who had been exposed to the more pleasant smell had much more positive dreams. So, if you want to have sweet dreams, ensure that your bedroom contains just a hint of your favorite smell. Dream on. In lesson one, I described how Eugene Ossorinsky revolutionized sleep science by discovering the association between dreaming and rapid eye movement, REM. For the first time in history, sleep scientists were able to pinpoint when a person was dreaming, and several researchers realized that this discovery had huge implications for dream control. Instead of spending the night randomly playing subtle sounds and hoping for the best, researchers now knew exactly when to press play. Much of the early work into dream control was carried out in the early 1960s by Stanford sleep scientist William Dement. Dement invited volunteers into his sleep laboratory, waited until they were dreaming, and then secretly played a tone into their ears, shone a bright light onto their face, or sprayed them with water. Dement then waited 10 minutes, woke up the participant with the aid of a loud dinner bell, and had them describe their dream. About half of the participants incorporated the stimuli, with, for instance, the water resulting in dreams about sudden rainfall, the tone causing people to dream about an explosion, and the bright light resulted in reports of the sudden outbreak of fire. Compiling a league table of stimulation, Dement reported that the light was only incorporated into 9% of the dreams, the tone into 23%, and the water into a massive 42%. In an additional set of studies, Dement played tape recordings of various sounds to his sleeping subjects, including a police siren, a steam locomotive, a squeaky door, and a speech by Martin Luther King. Presumably, I have a dream, and right at this moment, so do you. Once again, many of these sounds were incorporated into people's dreams. For instance, after hearing the Martin Luther King speech, one volunteer reported a dream in which they were eating in a dormitory and suddenly seeing a man stand up and talk about racial tension. Later on in the dream, the same imaginary man emphasized the need for people to love one another. Around half of the sounds were incorporated into participants' dreams, with police sirens and steam trains being especially effective, and squeaky doors and crickets chirping coming bottom of the class. In the late 1960s, psychologists built on this work by playing people's names into the ears of dreamers, and discovered that about half of the names subsequently made an appearance in their dreams. Playing dreamers a recording of their own name made the figures more assertive and independent, whereas the voice of a stranger resulted in a character that tended to be passive and unhelpful. After this initial flurry of research, the idea once again dropped by the wayside. Although researchers had discovered when best to stimulate dreamers and which type of signals worked well, they had no way of exporting these techniques beyond their sleep laboratories. I recently wondered whether it might be possible to use this work as the basis of an iPhone app that could help millions of people create their perfect dream. I contacted one of Britain's top iPhone app development companies and suggested that we conduct a large-scale project into dream control. A few weeks later, I met up with the company's CEO and they kindly agreed to come on board. And so the adventure began. The company assembled a team of top developers and started to put together the app. It was an ambitious project that pushed the iPhone to the very edge of its capability. Slowly, but surely, however, the Dream On project took shape. The idea is simple. Before going to sleep, people indicate on their iPhones at what time they would like to wake and select a specially prepared soundscape such as a walk in the countryside. Think breeze rustling through the trees. Or a visit to the coast, waves gently lapping at the shoreline. They then place their iPhone onto their mattress and go to sleep. The app works by targeting the final REM period in the sleep cycle, about 30 minutes before the person wants to wake up. The iPhone's movement sensors jump into action. When the sensors detect the lack of movement associated with dreaming, the app gently plays their chosen soundscape that then, in theory, influences their dreams. When they wake up, the person is then prompted to submit a description of their dream, and all of these anonymous reports are stored in our Dreamcatcher database. Dream On was launched at the 2012 Edinburgh International Science Festival. Within a few hours, I knew that we had a hit on our hands. The story quickly made its way around the globe and was reported by the BBC, NBC, and CNN. Within days, 500,000 people had downloaded the app, and over time, we have amassed millions of dream reports. Lots of people use the app on a daily basis, and so we are able to follow an ongoing storyline across several dreams. One of our most regular dreamers, for example, is having an imaginary affair with George Clooney. According to her dream reports, the two of them first met when George served her in a chemist shop and asked if she would like to go for a walk with him and his giant giraffe. Are people's dreams influenced by them choosing different soundscapes? Absolutely. If someone chooses the nature soundscape, they tend to experience dreams that involve greenery, flowers, and meadows. In contrast, when they select the beach soundscape, they're far more likely to be transported to the coast and suddenly feel the sun beating down on their skin. The effect may be due to the subtle sounds being played during the night, the power of suggestion, or a combination of the two. Whatever the explanation, we know that it is possible to help people shape their dreams. And encouraged by these findings, we have now created soundscapes based on 50 Shades of Grey, don't ask, and another that contains fake news reports of a zombie apocalypse. But does dream control always have to involve trying to become lucid and playing secret sounds in the middle of the night? Actually, no. In fact, millions of people have learned how to use a surprisingly easy and effective way of shaping their nocturnal fantasies. To find out more, we begin by discovering what not to think. The dark side of the moon. People have long associated a full moon with all manner of strange behaviors. Indeed, the term lunatic is derived from the Latin word for moon and has its roots in an old belief that people behaved in a bizarre way if the moon shone on them while they were asleep. In 2013, neuroscientist Christian Kajochen from the University of Basel decided to take a scientific look at this rather strange idea. Kajochen re-analyzed the data from several experiments that had been conducted in a university sleep laboratory. During these studies, volunteers had been connected to an EEG machine and had their sleep monitored throughout the night. Kajochen looked at the date of each session, figured out where it fell in the lunar cycle, and then plotted this against their sleeping patterns. An interesting relationship quickly emerged. Around the time of a full moon, the volunteers slept about 20 minutes less, took approximately 5 minutes longer to fall asleep, and experienced 30% less deep sleep throughout the night. What might explain this unusual effect? The patterns were not related to the menstrual cycle of female volunteers, and none of the participants could see the moon during the night. Instead, Kajochen favored an evolutionary hypothesis speculating that lighter sleeping patterns around the time of a full moon might have helped our predecessors guard against predators who were able to see more clearly in the moonlight. Fascinated by these findings, I examined whether the lunar cycle might also influence dreams. I randomly selected a few hundred dreams from the Dream On database and had them rated for bizarreness between 1, such as a man walking into a bar and having a quiet drink, to 7, for example, a horse walking into a bar and suddenly turning into a hot air balloon. I then plotted these ratings against the lunar cycle and was surprised to find that people were indeed having more bizarre dreams around the time of a full moon. So, if you want to enjoy especially strange dreams, make sure that you get an early night whenever there is a full moon. On the rebound. Right now, millions of people across the world will be attempting to control their dreams. When people feel especially anxious or worried, they often have bad dreams or even nightmares. In an attempt to prevent these unpleasant experiences, people often try to push these concerns out of their mind as they fall asleep. In doing so, they may well be making the situation far worse. Harvard psychologist Daniel Wegner has spent much of his career investigating the so-called rebound effect, wherein people who are asked not to think about something simply can't get it out of their mind. In my previous book, Paranormality, I described how his best-known experiment involves asking volunteers not to think about a white bear, and then getting them to indicate each time the aforementioned bear sauntered into their mind. The volunteers struggled to keep their brains bare of bears, and instead reported that the unwelcome creature kept popping up time and time again. Why does this curious phenomenon occur? According to some psychologists, when you try to push a thought out of your mind, you often end up repeatedly asking yourself, "Am I thinking about what I'm not supposed to be thinking about?" Because of this, you constantly remind yourself about the very thing that you are trying to forget, making it tricky to banish the thought from your mind. The rebound effect affects many areas of our lives, including when we head for bed. In one study, for example, insomniacs were asked to try to forget whatever it was that was keeping them awake. As a result, they had an even harder time than usual falling asleep. The effect can also exert an equally powerful influence over our dreams. In 2011, psychologist Richard Bryant from the University of New South Wales asked volunteers to briefly think about an unpleasant memory just before they went to sleep. Half of the volunteers were then asked to spend 5 minutes jotting down the thoughts and ideas that went through their head, but to actively avoid thinking about their unpleasant memory. In contrast, the other volunteers spent the same amount of time jotting down their thoughts and were allowed to think about their unpleasant memory. The following morning, all of the volunteers reported the dreams that they had had during the night, and the researchers counted the number of times that each volunteer mentioned their unpleasant memory. The results revealed that asking the volunteers to try not to think about the unpleasant memory prior to going to sleep doubled the likelihood of the unwanted memory popping up in their dreams. Understanding the rebound effect can help those wanting to prevent bad dreams and nightmares. Rather than trying not to think about your worries and concerns before you go to sleep, spend a few minutes allowing these thoughts to freely flow through your mind. Don't actively encourage them, but instead, just let them come in one ear and go out the other. This technique will help make your dreams more pleasant. However, when it comes to taking control of the more negative side of the night, there is an even easier way to make nightmares vanish into thin air. How to banish nightmares. Around 90% of the population has at least one nightmare each month, and around 3% of children and 1% of adults report that they suffer from recurring nightmares. These terrifying experiences can cause people to suffer from a variety of nighttime problems, including insomnia, fragmented sleep, and even sleep apnea. However, the good news is that help is at hand. sleep expert Barry Krakow, has dedicated much of his career to helping people cope with these highly emotional experiences and has developed a three-stage technique known as imagery rehearsal therapy. Krakow argues that many bad dreams and nightmares are a form of nocturnal habit and that it is possible to retrain people's brains to view the episode in a different way. In the first stage of imagery rehearsal therapy, people are asked to select an unpleasant dream or nightmare to work with. Second, the person is encouraged to think of ways in which they would like the dream to change. This might, for example, involve altering the way in which they behave in the dream, or the ending of the episode. Finally, they are asked to rehearse the new version of the dream in their mind. Krakow has discovered that some people struggle with the technique because they believe that their bad dreams are coming from their unconscious mind and that it is not possible to change the way in which their unconscious operates. This once-a-smoker, always-a-smoker approach to nightmares is also wrong. As we have seen time and time again throughout night school, both the quality and quantity of sleep and dreaming can be radically improved by making the smallest of changes. Krakow and his team have shown that imagery rehearsal therapy is highly effective as long as people are able to overcome this concern and use the technique for a few weeks. The vast majority of people can banish the bogeyman from their bedroom, with studies showing that the technique has a remarkable 90% success rate. Imagery rehearsal therapy can also help reduce many of the symptoms associated with post-traumatic stress disorder, as well as helping to quell the unpleasant dreams often associated with living through a natural disaster or being sexually assaulted. Imagery rehearsal therapy. This technique involves the following three steps. Note, this exercise is designed to illustrate a technique used by health professionals. If you believe that you or your child have a psychological problem, please consult a professional. 1. Determine the storyline of your nightmare. You first need to figure out the narrative underlying your nightmare. If you're experiencing several nightmares, you might want to start by choosing one that doesn't make you feel too anxious. Next, write down a first-person, present-tense account of the experience. First, I find myself trapped in a cave, etc. When you start to do this, you will probably focus on the scariest elements, such as the monster that attacks you or the threatening man that is always following you. That's fine. However, try to map out as much of the storyline as possible. Think about where you are in the nightmare, the time of day, and who is with you. Build up as many details as possible. You might find this somewhat scary, but remember to take it step by step and stop if you feel overly anxious. 2. Rewrite the storyline. This stage is all about rewriting the nightmare. Again, using the first person and present tense, create a much more pleasant version of the events. Perhaps it turns out that the scary events are just part of a film that you're starring in, and stop the moment that the director shouts cut. Or perhaps the scary people in the nightmare turn out to be your friends. Or maybe you don't run down that dark alley, but instead head for a well-lit street. Try to keep the scenario positive and believable. 3. Rehearse it. Now it is time for some imagery-based rehearsal. Find a quiet place to lie down during the day. Close your eyes. Relax. And try to imagine your new storyline in as much detail as possible. Feel free to invent new and fun details. The important thing to remember is that you shouldn't be thinking about what is happening, but actually trying to form the scene in your head. Try to make the images and sounds as vivid as those in your dreams. If an unwanted element pops into your head, open your eyes, take a deep breath, recognize the intrusion, and then go back into the exercise. Try to carry out the exercise at least twice a day for about 3 minutes each time. Finally, if you have the nightmare again, your new and improved version of events will be much more likely to pop into your mind, and so transform the negative experience into something far more pleasant. Psychotherapist Anne Sayre Wiseman, what a lovely surname, has examined how the same type of approach can be used to help children who are troubled by bad dreams and nightmares. As with imagery rehearsal therapy, Wiseman's technique involves three stages, with children being encouraged to draw and talk about their bad dream. Think about how they could transform it into something more pleasant, and then mentally rehearse this new and improved dream. Children's nightmares. Many children experience nightmares, and these bad dreams usually involve them being attacked by some kind of monster or negative entity. If your child repeatedly experiences the same nightmare, try the following. Note: this exercise is designed to illustrate a technique used by health professionals. If you believe that you or your child have a psychological problem, please consult a professional. When they wake up from a distressing nightmare, give them a hug and offer some reassurance. Rather than discuss the experience then and there, say something to lower the expectations of the experience happening again that night. Perhaps monsters need to sleep and so only tend to appear once a night, and that you will talk about the dream tomorrow. The next day, encourage your child to make some kind of artwork that helps to illustrate the nightmare. This could be a drawing or a model. Ask them to use this artwork as a starting point to describe their bad dream. If they're scared about discussing what happened, you could suggest that they add some sort of self-protection to their drawing or model, such as a shield, a cage around the monster, an army of friends, or a superhero. Ask your child how they might change the bad dream into something far more positive. Many children might suggest killing the monster. This isn't a great idea because it encourages them to dream about violence and suggests that physical force is the best way of solving a problem. Instead, encourage them to humanize the monster, to understand what it wants, and to see if it has something important to say. Finally, encourage your child to draw or model a far more positive version of their dream. It is especially important to have them consider the kindest and wisest way of responding to the monster in the dream. This might involve them imagining a much more friendly relationship with the monster, drawing on the help of a superhero, a wise and strong animal, a parent or a teacher. Encourage your child to rehearse this new scenario a few times and suggest that this version of events is likely to simply pop into their head if the nightmare happens again. A dream life. A large body of work shows that people can use the power of imagination to change their dreams. I wondered whether it might be possible to take things one stage further and use this idea to help them improve their waking lives. It was time to carry out the first ever experiment to explore dreaming and self-development. I assembled a group of 400 volunteers who wanted to achieve an important aim, such as losing weight, eating more healthily, stopping smoking, or improving their career. I tracked the volunteers for 2 weeks, and then asked everyone whether they had experienced at least one goal-related dream, and if they'd made significant progress towards their aim. My theory was that the volunteers who had dreamed about their goal would be more successful than the others. The results were fascinating. Overall, it was a high-achieving group, with 58% of volunteers making significant progress towards their goal. As predicted, dreaming played a key role in the process, with 74% of those dreaming about their goals making significant strides towards achieving them, compared to only 40% of those that didn't have such dreams. I had found the first scientific evidence that dreaming plays a key role in helping people improve their waking lives. The experiment also identified the types of people who are likely to have goal-related dreams. Before the study started, everyone was asked to rate their imagery skills by indicating how easy they found it to create a mental picture of an object or scene. On the basis of these ratings, everyone was categorized as either a high or low visualizer. 32% of the high visualizers dreamed about their goal, versus only 12% of the low visualizers. In short, proof that some people are born dreamers and further evidence that dreams can help people achieve their aims. The final part of the study also started to explore whether it might be possible to encourage people to dream about their goals and achieve them. All of the volunteers were randomly assigned to one of three groups. One group acted as control and didn't receive any special advice about how to achieve their goals. The second group was asked to spend a few moments in the middle of the day visualizing themselves, behaving in a way that was consistent with their aim. For example, if a volunteer wanted to eat more healthily, they might be asked to imagine themselves choosing a piece of fruit instead of a slice of cake. Similarly, if they wanted to stop smoking, they might imagine themselves using an electronic cigarette whenever they felt the urge to light up. The final group was asked to complete the same visualization exercise, but instead of forming the mental images towards the middle of the day, they were asked to try to influence their dreams by visualizing just before they went to sleep. The results, again, showed the power of dream visualization. Compared to all of the other volunteers, those in the visualize before bedtime group, who did indeed shape their dreams, were 10% more likely to actually achieve their goals. The study shows that people really can make their dreams a reality. This radically new approach to change has important implications for every area of our personal and professional lives. Although important, it is only the start of the journey. Future work needs to explore how everyone can best incorporate their aims and ambitions into their dreams. From sport to self-help, entrepreneurship to education, it is time to harness the power of the night. For centuries, people struggled to control their dreams. Now the science of sleep can help people shape their nocturnal fantasies. As a result, millions of people across the world are able to create their perfect dream, transform their nightmares into sweet dreams, and change their lives while they are sound asleep. Dream control has moved from the realms of science fiction into science fact. Conclusion. Time for bed. Where we engage in some myth-busting, reveal 10 things that every adult and child in the country should know about sleep and dreaming, and set out to change the world. At the start of my talks about night school, I regularly present audiences with each of the following statements and ask them to raise their hands if they think the statement is true. 1. When I'm asleep, my brain switches off. 2. I can learn to function well on less sleep. 3. Napping is a sign of laziness. 4. Snoring is annoying but harmless. 5. I know when I'm getting sleepy. 6. Dreams consist of meaningless thoughts and images. 7. Sleep is for wimps, and productive people spend less time in bed. 8. I don't have a problem getting enough sleep, and so there's no need to try to improve things. 9. A small amount of alcohol before bedtime improves sleep. 10. I can catch up on my lost sleep at the weekend. 11. Teenagers who spend lots of time in bed are just being lazy. 12. Eating cheese just before you go to bed gives you nightmares. All of the statements suggest that sleep and dreaming are of little value, and that it's possible to treat tiredness with pills and the odd lie-in. During my talks, each of them is greeted with a sea of hands, We've examined all of these topics in detail during night school, so let's refresh our memories by taking a quick look at each of the statements in turn. 1. When I'm asleep, my brain switches off. Myth. When you fall asleep, your sense of self-awareness shuts down, and so it may feel as if you've become dormant. In fact, your brain remains highly active during sleep and carries out several tasks that are essential for your well-being. 2. I can learn to function well on less sleep. Myth. Sleep is a biological need, and it simply isn't possible to cut corners. Of course, you can force yourself to sleep less, but you will not be fully rested, and the way in which you think, feel, and behave will be impaired. 3. Napping is a sign of laziness. Myth. Your circadian rhythm makes you feel sleepy throughout the night and for a much shorter period of time, towards the middle of the afternoon. Napping is entirely natural and helps make you more alert, focused, creative, and productive. 4. Snoring is annoying but harmless. Myth. Snoring can be a symptom of sleep apnea. This serious medical condition causes you to experience hundreds of mini awakenings throughout the night and is associated with an increased risk of heart disease, obesity, and cancer. 5. I know when I'm getting sleepy. Myth. People are very poor judges of how tired they are. As a result, they often drive when they're drowsy and struggle through the day, not realizing that they are far from their best. 6. Dreams consist of meaningless thoughts and images. Myth. When you dream, your brain is often attempting to work through your concerns. As a result, your dreams can provide a useful insight into your worries and also help come up with innovative solutions to these issues. 7. Sleep is for wimps, and productive people spend less time in bed. Myth. If you don't get enough sleep, then you'll struggle to concentrate, become accident-prone, lack willpower, and become less productive. Worse still, you will increase your chances of becoming overweight, having a heart attack, and dying early. 8. I don't have a problem getting enough sleep, and so there's no need to try to improve things. Myth. A small percentage of people are super sleepers. They enjoy a good night's sleep almost every night, can fall asleep wherever they want, and have sweet dreams. Compared to most, they are happier, healthier, and wealthier. Even if your sleep is okay, you can still improve by becoming a super sleeper. 9. A small amount of alcohol before bedtime improves sleep. Myth. Alcohol may help you to fall asleep, but it also results in a far more disturbed night. Even a small tipple results in you spending less time in restorative deep sleep, having fewer dreams, and being more likely to snore. 10. I can catch up on my lost sleep at the weekend. Myth. When you fail to get enough sleep, you develop a sleep debt. Spending more time in bed for a day will help ease this problem, but won't fully restore you for the coming week. Over time, this lifestyle results in many of the problems associated with sleep deprivation. 11. Teenagers who spend lots of time in bed are just being lazy. Myth. When we hit adolescence, our circadian rhythms become delayed by about 3 hours, causing us to become more evening types. In addition, teenagers require between 9 and 10 hours sleep each night. They're not being lazy. It is just biology at work. 12. Eating cheese just before you go to bed gives you nightmares. Myth. This myth probably has its origins in Charles Dickens' story A Christmas Carol. In 2005, the British Cheese Board asked 200 volunteers to spend a week eating a small piece of cheese before going to sleep, and then report their dreams the next morning. None of them had nightmares. All of the statements are incorrect. Nevertheless, the vast majority of the public are convinced that they are true, and as a result, place very little value on sleep and dreaming. This has had a terrible impact on society. Rather than celebrate the night, sleep and dreaming are now treated as annoying interruptions to our all-important lives. Living in a world that hasn't had a good night's rest for years has finally taken its toll. The vast majority of schoolchildren and students now arrive for their classes severely sleep-deprived. Adult sleep debt is at a record high. The demand for sleeping pills is rising year on year. And millions of people go about their daily business in a zombie-like state that is ruining their relationships, health, and productivity. Perhaps more than at any other point in history, there is now an urgent need to change our attitudes towards the night. I believe that this will require nothing short of a revolution. During night school, we have examined the science surrounding sleep and dreaming. In the first few lessons, we discovered what your brain gets up to every night of your life, the severe downside of sleep deprivation, the secrets of supersleep, the best way of banishing the bogeyman from your bedroom, and the surprising truth about sleep learning and power napping. In later lessons, we found out what really happens in your dreams, discovered how dreams can provide a useful insight into your worries and concerns, and learned how to experience your perfect nocturnal fantasy. Unfortunately, up until now, much of this material has remained hidden away in academic journals. This needs to change. In the same way that we want every adult and child in the country to have key literacy and numeracy skills, so we also need to ensure that they understand the fundamental findings from sleep science. Although extremely important, this is only part of the solution. Throughout night school, we've encountered a series of quick but highly effective techniques that help people get a great night's sleep and learn from their dreams. These techniques can help people move from poor sleepers to good, and from good to great. It's now vital that these techniques become common knowledge. To this end, I've assembled the Night School Manifesto, a list of 10 of the most effective night school techniques. My hope is that over the next few years, this manifesto will become part of the national curriculum and regularly feature on the media and the internet. If this dream becomes a reality, millions of people will be able to improve their lives by making the most of the night. The Night School Manifesto. Here are 10 techniques that will allow everyone to get the most out of the night. Note, this exercise is designed to illustrate a technique used by health professionals. If you believe that you or your child have a psychological problem, please consult a professional. If you want to feel sleepy when you head to bed, banish the blues. Try wearing glasses with amber-tinted lenses for 2 to 3 hours before you go to bed. These will block the blue light that stimulates your brain and make you feel especially sleepy. If you want to fall asleep quickly, use positive imagery and the paradox principle. First, imagine yourself in a very pleasant scenario. Make the scenario as detailed as possible, but avoid anything that's too exciting. Perhaps planning your dream holiday or thinking about your perfect evening out. If that doesn't work, try to stay awake. Strange as it sounds, forcing yourself to actually remain awake is one of the best ways of nodding off. If you lie in bed feeling worried, the list. If you have a lot in your mind, make a list of all the things that you have to do the next day. If you are worrying about something specific, jot that down too and try to allow the thought to drift through your mind rather than focusing on it. If you wake up in the middle of the night, the jigsaw method. You might be experiencing a perfectly natural phenomenon known as segmented sleep, where people sleep in two long blocks with a gap of roughly 30 minutes between them. However, if you lie awake for more than 20 minutes, get up and do something non-stimulating for a few minutes, such as working on a jigsaw. If you want to learn in your sleep, the real secret of sleep learning. Sleep glues memories into your mind. So don't stay up late trying to cram information into your brain. Instead, Study during the day, remind yourself about key points just before you nod off, and get lots of sleep at night. If you want to overcome jet lag, book flights following the simple adage, fly east, fly early, fly west, fly late. If you want to boost your brain power during the day, neuro-napping. Taking a cat nap will help you to become more alert, creative, and productive. Neuro-napping involves listening to music when you're studying or brainstorming and then playing the same music when you nap. Napping boosts memory and creativity by around 60%. If you're experiencing a recurring nightmare or bad dream, imagery rehearsal therapy. Spend some time during the day describing your nightmare, creating a different ending for the episode, and then imagining this new and improved ending. Studies show that this simple technique stops nightmares 90% of the time. If you want to gain an insight into your concerns and worries, dream work. Describe a striking dream in detail. Look for ways in which it applies to your life and then use this as the basis for change. Research shows that around 80% of people find that this yields an important insight into their concerns. If you want to achieve a goal, the power of pre-sleep suggestion. Just before you fall asleep, tell yourself that you want to dream about doing whatever you need to do to achieve your goal. For example, if you want to go to the gym more frequently, imagine yourself putting on your trainers and heading out the house. As you drift asleep, tell yourself that you want these images to crop up in your dreams. But even this is still just the tip of the iceberg. Almost every aspect of society needs to undergo a radical change in focus. Clinicians and medics should appreciate how the new science of sleep can be used to promote physical health and overcome psychological disorders. Businesses across the globe need to realize how they can boost productivity by encouraging employees to take a short sleep in cost-effective nap rooms. Hotels and airports could create effective ways of helping weary travelers overcome the devastating effects of jet lag. Schools and colleges need to ensure that every child understands how to get a good night's rest, learn while they are sound asleep, and eliminate nightmares. In short, night needs to become the new day. For years, the self-development movement has focused on improving people's waking lives. It's time to celebrate the new science of sleep and make the most of the missing one-third of every day. It's time to embrace the night. Perhaps most important of all, it's time for bed. Sleep well. Appendix. Donald and the Elephant at School by Jenny Hambleton and Richard Wiseman. One sunny day, Donald was walking happily to school. It was an exciting day because the children were going on a trip to the new park in the afternoon, on a big, shiny bus. "I have a funny feeling that today is going to be my lucky day," thought Donald. Bump! Donald walked straight into a large grey elephant.
"Hello there," said the elephant in a friendly voice. "I have never been to a school. Can I come to school with you?"
"Yes, of course you can," said Donald.
When the bell went, Donald took the elephant into class. "Your elephant can only stay if he is very good and helpful," said the teacher.
"I'm sure he will be," said Donald.
At painting time, the elephant put his apron on and sucked up all the paint into his trunk. He sprayed it all over the teacher.
"This is a disaster," thought Donald.
At snack time, the children offered the fruit bowl to the elephant to choose a piece of fruit. He picked up all the fruit and ate it in one gulp.
"This is a disaster," thought Donald.
It was time for swimming.
Donald lent the elephant a pair of trunks, and the elephant jumped into the pool. When the elephant jumped in, all the water in the pool came out.
"This is a disaster," thought Donald.
Before lunch, it was time for singing, but the elephant trumpeted so loud that all the children put their hands on their ears.
"This is a disaster," thought Donald.
The teacher was cross.
"I said your elephant could only come to school if he was kind and helpful. So far, he has covered me in paint, eaten all the fruit, emptied the swimming pool, and made everyone's ears hurt with his terrible singing. This is a disaster."
Donald was sad. He'd thought it was going to be a lucky day and everything was going wrong.
"Please give him one more chance," said Donald.
"He wants to be very kind and helpful."
At last it was time for the trip. The children climbed onto the bus, and the elephant put his seatbelt on and sat next to Donald. They had only been going a little way when the tire went pop!
"This is a disaster," thought Donald.
The elephant got off the bus and blew the tire up with his trunk.
"I knew he would be very kind and helpful," said Donald.
When they got to the park, the gate was locked.
"Oh, no,"
said all the children.
"This is a disaster."
"Don't worry," said the teacher. "I have the keys." Just as he said this, one of the children bumped into the teacher. He dropped the keys and they fell down the drain.
"Oh, no," said all the children. "This is a disaster."
Quick as a flash, the elephant reached down the drain with his long trunk and carefully lifted the keys out and gave them to the teacher. Everyone cheered and agreed that after all, it had been very lucky that Donald had met the elephant on his way to school that day. "It just goes to show," said the teacher, "that sometimes things may seem bad, but they often turn out for the best." On the way home, Donald wondered if the elephant would come back to school the next day. But he never saw him again. After you've listened to this story with your child, help cement its meaning in place by saying something like, "Well, Donald thought that taking the elephant to school was a disaster, but it turned out for the best. It just goes to show how bad things often work out well in the end." About the author. Richard Wiseman holds Britain's only professorship in the public understanding of psychology at the University of Hertfordshire, where he researches a range of topics including luck, self-help, illusion, and persuasion. This work has been published in the world's leading academic journals. Richard has also written several books that have been translated into over 30 languages, including The Luck Factor, Quirkology, Paranormality, 59 Seconds, and Rip It Up. His psychology-based YouTube videos have received over 150 million views, and he has given keynote addresses to organizations across the world, including the Royal Society, the Swiss Economic Forum, and Google. Richard is the most followed British psychologist on Twitter, and was recently listed in the Independent on Sunday's top 100 people who make Britain a better place to live. Over 2 million people have taken part in his mass participation experiments, and he has acted as a creative consultant to Derren Brown, The Mythbusters, CBS's The Mentalist, Heston Blumenthal, Nick Cave, and Jeremy Deller. Richard is an honorary fellow of the British Science Association and was the 2010 guest director of the Edinburgh International Science Festival. He began his working life as a professional magician and is a member of the Inner Magic Circle.